So it's basically carve your own success, not in the terms of making more money, success in terms of being able to establish communication and establish a sense of community. It might not be everyone in your company or team, but there are people that do want to engage in this more than ever. I think companies are modern day villages. We spend so much time there. What do we seek right now? We seek love, belonging, being able to be heard and understood. How can we find that outside of our family and friends? It's within this modern day village of our companies. What's interesting that I've also seen is like the more vulnerable you are, the more vulnerable other people will be.
That was Jen Lim, the CEO and co-founder of Delivering Happiness, a company that helps other organizations figure out how to use positive psychology and scientific happiness to create healthier cultures for more profitable and sustainable business. Hello, everyone. I'm Celeste Headley. Welcome to Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. This podcast brings you conversations with some of the most brilliant minds, offering really valuable advice and some inspiration to help you navigate life in your career and at home. This episode is brought to you by Cisco, and it's really timely for Mental Health Awareness Month. In fact, the positive news is that mental wellness is at the forefront of conversations everywhere, even in the workplace, as organizations are more focused than ever before on supporting the mental health of their employees. I had the chance to talk with happiness expert and best-selling author Jen Lim about the pursuit of happiness, specifically in our new pandemic normal or abnormal. She offers some really tactical tips for navigating this time and a few ideas on ways we can grow teams and businesses by first tending to our personal wellness. So let's dive in. So something that we've seen over the pandemic is that companies have started investing more into well-being programs, and they're not always paying off the way perhaps they should or the way people expect. Can you give us an idea of why you think that is? Why is there a disconnect between some mental health initiatives and actual increases in well-being?
Yeah, I love this question because, I mean, you're right. There's tons of companies that are investing in this field, topic, whatever you want to call it, well-being or happiness. And I think the disconnect is that the solution is not in a simple tool. It's not like getting a Calm app or Headspace app for everyone in the company and calling it a day. Those tools are super helpful, but the disconnect is like, what's the real need and how do we address it with individuals? And it requires people to be able to have these conversations and be able to sit down with people to have one-on-ones or team sessions of like, hey, how are you and what are you going through right now from a more holistic perspective? So I think if we can work on that, then investments in these kind of programs would be so much more impactful.
But the World Health Organization was already warning us about a burnout epidemic before the pandemic began. And it looks like the numbers of employees reporting symptoms of burnout has been on the rise. Do you think as a corporate community, did we make some bad decisions in order to deal with and cope with the COVID-19 pandemic?
I guess it's hard to say whether those decisions were bad because I think everyone was trying to react. And it was almost like a triage situation in a hospital. And some people in hospitals were actually experiencing it. But for companies, it was like, what do we do? You know, what the heck are we doing right now? And how can I help? Kind of feeling. So I just don't think that's ever a bad decision. It's only bad if it continues without something being learned from it and how to course correct and adjust and adapt to what the real needs are of our particular company, team, or community, or society at large. But if we're not listening and from the data, the stats, and the stories, and adjusting and adapting to those things, that's when it becomes a bad decision.
So what do you think we have learned? I mean, what have you learned from what we've seen over the past 2 years?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's been just so much, in some ways, trauma, in some ways, loss, and not just loss of loved ones, but loss of hope or loss of autonomy or control, loss of expectations. And because of that, it's more important than ever to ground ourselves in, number one, psychological safety, in being able to feel human and being able to show up that way, both in work and life. And then I think as leaders, when we're aware of that within ourselves, that helps us become even better leaders for others, to create that space where people can feel safe to say, I'm having a crappy ass day, and being able to have the kind of environment where we can have those conversations. So for me, knowing that I've been, you know, at the Delivering Happiness business for 11 years now, you know, we couldn't talk about happiness for a while. And for some people, they still don't want to talk about happiness. So it's being able to reframe the conversation. We all still want to be happy. This is true. But there's more than that now. And I think being able to, as leaders, create that space to have these conversations is more important than ever.
Is zero-sum game between productivity and these kind of well-being and happiness initiatives? I mean, if you invest in giving someone space to take a day off when they need to, does that mean you're losing productivity?
Yeah. So my findings of what we've been doing with clients and people is that it's actually a positive sum game when you do these things. So essentially, like, when you invest in these kind of things and actually encourage people to walk away from this computer, walk away from Zoom land, whatever it is, their productivity through research and science shows that it increases when they come back. Like, a literal walk in the park can actually increase that. I know it's really counterintuitive to knowing that we're in a recession, people are hurting, profits are hurting, but it goes back to the data. Like, if you can actually encourage people to take breaks and to be in their moment of mindfulness and to be in the moment of nature, whatever it is that helps them, they'll be that much more productive, engaged, and purposeful for you as a leader or a company, and therefore the bottom line.
So there was a recent Gallup poll that said the greatest factor that contributes or detracts from a person's mental health is their job. And as we mentioned, burnout is on the rise right now. It was before the pandemic. It's gotten significantly worse since then. And then we compare that with the numbers of people resigning from their jobs. And it's hard not to make a connection between those things. How does a worker, I mean, many of the people that are listening to us right now are not only leaders, but also employees. What kind of things can they do to address an issue if they're beginning to feel burnt out and they're feeling like throwing up their hands and leaving?
Yeah, so there's a lot of layers to that question, but I do want to caveat, when I say leaders, I don't necessarily mean like a manager or a CEO. I believe, and I've seen it time and time again, that leaders happen within ourselves, whether you're an employee or, you know, C-level. We have a choice, and sometimes it's harder than others, but we have a choice to be a leader in our own life, in our own work life, because it's so integrated now. So I just want to make sure that that's where I'm coming from.
Right.
And then the next kind of build off of that concept is that when we spend the time, like, Great Resignation, I think it's actually amazingly great for everyone, because it's also a great awareness and awakening of people really realizing, you know, we had months and months and months of just spending time to ourselves or with our family in the same room or house or whatever. But the reflections that I've been seeing where people are just honestly like, why am I doing this again? Why am I spending my precious minutes of a day doing this kind of work when I'd rather be prioritizing myself or my loved ones or my family, you know, friends, that kind of thing. So I see this as like a huge opportunity to address what you're saying with burnout. Only we know as individuals can address that burnout, because only we know what's actually causing it. And so that's why I'm so passionate about this work that we do. It's because when we spend the time and be intentional about who we are, like our purpose, our values, how do we want to live our life? How do I spend our minutes of the day? Then we know how to address the burnout. Our bosses and managers, board members don't know how to do that, but we do. And that's where I think the power of being able to say we're the leader of our own personal work life comes.
What kind of advice can you give to someone on having this conversation with their supervisors or their executives, if they feel that their job is burning them out, if they feel exhausted, if they feel overworked and overloaded, how do they broach this with leadership that perhaps has not gotten on board yet?
Yeah, totally. Number one, I think just a reminder to have these conversations is to remember that they're people too. I know that sounds weird, but the empathy piece of it is like, they're probably burnt out too in some form or another. I kind of like massage this quote a little bit because it's not all about being kind anymore. It's about being human and realizing everyone has something that's going on that we don't know about. So by having number one, that empathy, and then coming to the table when it comes to workplaces and when it comes to like, yeah, we all have a job to do. We have a role, we have responsibilities and we get paid for it. But when we come to the table and have that empathy and having that conversation with our boss or supervisor and saying, hey, this is what's happening to me, but I know we need to do this and I want to support you in your goals. And in order for me to do this, this is what I would like to lay out, X, Y, and Z, so that I can perform better and meet these goals for you and for us as a team and therefore a company. So when you come to the table with that, where it is a positive sum game, because you're helping them and they're helping you. And then it's kind of like what I talk about in my book is like the triple win. And therefore, someone else is going to benefit from this, whether it's your customers or your family, you know, most importantly and all that. So I just really encourage having those kind of conversations where the respect is across both sides, if not all sides of who's being impacted by the decisions.
We've talked about the pandemic and how that has increased people's stress. But there's been other things going on that have raised stress levels, right? I mean, there's been a lot of political upheaval. Certainly, there's been racial tension. It's Asian American History Month as well as Mental Health Awareness Month. And we know that there's been a lot of incidents involving hate aimed at the AAPI community, that it's impossible for people to leave that entirely at the door when they get to work, right?
Yeah.
How do, especially people of color and women, how do we deal with all of these exterior pressures and concerns, even in the workplace where sometimes it's not considered professional to talk about them?
Yeah. I think there's been a huge shift, and I'm not being overly optimistic here, in that the conversations we're having are more real. And just a quick example, like, thank you, Simone Biles, for like taking your workplace on a international stage and saying no. And there were definitely haters. Yeah. And there are definitely people that just said, yes, like, thank goodness, someone's finally taking a stand. So I know we're not all Olympians, but we are in our right of how we live our lives. And the approach that we've been doing, and it's even more accentuated now, is bring our whole selves to work. So as women, as leaders, as human beings, like when we realize, and I think we are realizing it in the last couple of years especially, is that we are our whole selves, whether or not we're at work or behind Zoom land or whatever, or in Zoom land. And when we entertain that conversation or encourage it, number one, within ourselves. So when I talk about like being authentic, I talk about this a lot in my book, because there's so much more to that of like how we show up at work. It's being authentic to every aspect of us, our highs and our lows. So our mental state, our emotional state, our relational state, our physical state, and of course our spiritual or purposeful state. So if we start doing that within ourselves, even if no one believes this stuff, that creates a shift in being able to control what we can, because that's within us. And then if we can encourage these conversations within others, in teams, and therefore companies, you'd be amazed how deep the conversations can go and how deep the relationships become, even in Zoom land, because it becomes real. And so I think that's like the best thing we can do for ourselves is getting real with that conversation and then expanding it to others. And then you actually see the productivity, you know, and the engagement and, you know, all the profit stuff come. But especially right now, it's like this whole idea of self-care and self-love is so prevalent. But it's like, how do I do that? Let's just begin with ourselves and being real about conversations from a holistic place.
I mean, I can already hear, Jen, the questions from listeners saying, I don't feel comfortable speaking up about this stuff. I don't think my workplace is a place where it's okay for me to talk about issues of discrimination without getting punished, without being seen as a complainer or a troublemaker. Any tips on how to handle this in a productive way?
Yeah, I would say that it's easier said than done, right? But because of the Great Resignation, so something to consider is, even though it might be hard, but like people resigning and like expressing with their feet out the door for a reason. And that would be a consideration, knowing that it takes a lot of effort to get there, to say there are other opportunities and other companies out there that will embrace this or that will entertain this kind of conversation. But if that seems too hard, at least at this moment, I would say how to address it more immediately is choose your community. There are other people, I guarantee you, within your team, a company, whatever it is, that feel exactly the way you do. And just start there. And that builds a bit of momentum in being able to engage in that way. So it's basically carve your own success, not in the terms of making more money, success in terms of being able to establish communication and establish a sense of community. It might not be everyone in your company or team, but there are people that do want to engage in this more than ever. I think companies are modern day villages. We spend so much time there. What do we seek right now? We seek love, belonging, being able to be heard and understood. How can we find that outside of our family and friends? It's within this modern day village of our companies. What's interesting that I've also seen is like the more vulnerable you are, the more vulnerable other people will be. And that's when you see how you can carve out the success to be engaging in those, if not leading those conversations.
You're listening to Women Amplified, featuring Jen Lim, the CEO and co-founder of Delivering Happiness. If you love this podcast, rate it 5 stars, review it, share it with others. Everyone can benefit from the incredible advice and insight that we hear from our guests every month. This episode of Women Amplified is proudly sponsored by Cisco. Cisco knows that supporting and developing women leaders to meet the demands of the new world of work right now is critical. Learn more at cisco.com/careers. Now let's get back to our conversation with Jen Lim.
So I want to talk a little bit more about specifics on how to create these kind of healthier and happier environments in workplaces. And so to start off, I want to hear about what you call the greenhouse model, that you talked about this framework that allows companies to be more flexible. Can you tell me what the greenhouse model that you advise is?
Yeah, so the greenhouse model, it occurs at like several levels. So the me, which is obviously the individual, there's the we, and then there's the community, which is essentially our ecosystem of customers, vendors, and partners, anyone we touch. And now, especially society and planet are so integrated within that. So it all starts with the me. And the whole metaphor or analogy comes from, we as people, especially women, are so inclined to take care of others. And we want to grow other greenhouses, whether it's at work or children. And we yet still forget that we need to put on our oxygen mask first, maybe because we don't fly as much anymore, so we don't hear that message as much. But a big part of the greenhouse framework is to make sure you're nurturing your own greenhouse as you grow others. And from a tactical level, being able to nurture a greenhouse means having, and I talk about this in my book, it's very practical in terms of identifying your purpose, and it could be draft. It should be not daunting. Identify your values, what's most important to you, and start from there. And then the greenhouse starts to build from first yourself into the me, then the we, and community. And the other environmental elements of the greenhouse, the conditions are being able to be adaptable, accountable, create a sense of belonging, and committed to this, because this is all a journey for all of us. And knowing it can't be checked, marked off in the course of a day. But realize when you have these conditions, then you're creating something that can grow for the long term in a more sustainable way.
So I wonder if you can give us two or three things that a leader could institute right away or quickly that might improve their team members' well-being. What are some fixes that they could institute immediately?
Yeah, the question in itself has been coming up so much. And the most tactical, practical thing is to invite not just yourself, but other people to do these exercises of identifying purpose and values. So basically, like if you're a leader of, let's say, 10 people or 5 people, don't just do it for yourself. Do it with everyone and have a conversation about it. And purpose, how we distill it, is essentially what lights you, positive or negative, like what energizes you or like what pisses the hell out of you. And then also what's your talent? And then also what kind of impact do you want to make? Those three questions, I tell you time and time again, when you ask everyone in your team to do that together, you'd be amazed how much alignment and overlap there is. And that just automatically starts gelling people in a more meaningful way. And then I would say in another exercise is to identify your values. And something we have done and so impactful right now is we call it the happiness heartbeats exercise. And acknowledging that it's not just our highs that we learn our happiness from, it's also our lows. And so when you name and identify, like, what are your top three highs in your life? Not just work, but life. And then what are your top three lows? And so, for example, for me, one of my highs was building a company, climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. My lows were losing my dad 18 years ago and losing my business partner and one of my best buddies last year, Tony. And being able to create that snapshot for yourself, then you can actually pull out the themes of what's most important. And for me, my values, because of these moments in my life, was a sense of autonomy, freedom, a sense of relationships, and a sense of authenticity. So just imagine you're doing this with everyone in your team. And like, make sure you have some Kleenex around, because that's when you get the real, you know, real deal. And then, you know, if you're in Zoomland or not, you get to get this sense of connection. And then, so no matter what your business priorities are, your goals and all that, we're looking to work together to make those things happen. So those are the first two things that I've seen so impactful, especially right now since COVID happened.
Okay, so is that different from what you would advise to all the listeners on how they can personally take control? I mean, we have so many people, and we've heard from many of them, who are struggling with their mental health right now. They are perhaps not in a workplace where the leadership are going to listen to you right now or read a book like Beyond Happiness or engage in the exercise you just said. What would you tell them?
I would just remind that a part of this is that I really highlight the fact that we need to do the work within ourselves. But when we do this kind of work with other people, and again, this is just like humanity 101 type of work, where even if the CEO doesn't believe you or the manager doesn't give a crap, when we help others and hold a mirror and not necessarily try to be the mechanic and fix everything, that is a big part of our own personal fulfillment, happiness, and therefore purpose. So even when, I mean, I'll speak from my own personal experience, like one of my lowest lows was after Tony passed. And it wasn't until I was being able to identify that I need to open my own mental health to others, share my experience with others, that really helped me get back to a better place. And it seems counterintuitive, and sometimes it's super hard when going through these tough times. But I would just encourage the fundamental system of how we live as human beings. Like, part of our purpose is not just fulfilling our own goals and happiness, but part of our purpose is helping others. And by sharing those low moments or states of mental health, I think we all can recognize that in the end, we are here to be a community to belong with each other and to be able to express and be heard and understood. So that's what I would suggest.
And for those, just to keep everyone with us, Tony was the founder of Zappos and was your co-founder of the company Delivering Happiness, who passed away.
Oh, no, he was the CEO of Zappos and yes, and the co-founder of Delivering Happiness. Yes, thank you for clarifying that.
Can you tell me why you called your book Beyond Happiness? You have a company that's called Delivering Happiness, and yet you wrote a book called Beyond Happiness. Why?
Yeah, I didn't even come up with that title to the very end. So if you can imagine January 2020, everything was like, you know, the whole world was optimistic, I feel like. And that's when I was supposed to, like, I had this really neat and tidy outline and I was supposed to write that book. And then, of course, to paraphrase Mike Tyson, everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth. And everyone got punched in the mouth, if not many times. And so, like, for me, every time I saw a newsfeed headline from pandemic to recession to social unrest to racial inequality to all these things, I couldn't write that book anymore. And then, of course, ultimately, my biggest loss, and again, I know everyone went through some sort of loss of loved ones and hope and autonomy, was Tony passing and like right after Thanksgiving in 2020.
Yeah.
And here I am, like every time I saw these headlines, and then of course that major blow at the end of the year, I was almost rewriting the book because it wasn't enough, I didn't feel, to capture all these things that you're asking about, of the things that are happening in our own lives that are most personal to us, you know, like Asian hate, all those crimes and Black Lives Matter, you know, all that stuff is like crazy. So that's where I really had to process and really take a step back. Like, what is it am I really trying to say? And that's when I realized happiness is, of course, something we all want, but it's not everything. And being able to be still and at peace with not just the highs, but also the lows within us and therefore humanity, that's where this mental health stuff that you're also mentioning comes in. What are our strengths? Of course, we want to celebrate that, but what are our shadow sides? What are the things that we're sweeping under the rug that happened, maybe traumas when we were growing up that we thought we were over, but we never really were because we never addressed them? That's why I really wanted to expand the conversation so that it's beyond happiness. It's just not enough to not be real about the underside of who we are as individuals and look at each other with not just happiness, but with humanity, both at work and in life. So that's where I eventually landed. Like, it's just not enough to be happy.
Is it working for you?
For me personally, or?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, part of writing that book was me processing what was going on, not just with Tony's passing, but what was going on in the world.
Yeah.
And I think the previous time prior to that was when 9/11 happened. 9/11, I got laid off and lost my dad, all within about a year's time. That changed my life frame and made me realize I need to reprioritize how I spend my days. And that's when Delivering Happiness happened and, like, you know, all these great things. But then that moment of series of events, kind of moments that culminated into how can I share in a way as real as I can be of what I've seen that can work, not just for companies and like doing this consulting thing or whatever, but really get into the heart of who we are as human beings and how we can live a more real and loving legacy today before we're gone for ourselves and each other. So in some ways, that book was probably one of the hardest freaking things I've had to do.
Yeah.
But I learned a lot in that. I'm still learning. And just even having this conversation with you is part of the process of like how it's helped me get to this new place of grounding myself in everything I've learned, but knowing that we as human beings, like where there's so much expansion, so much light in all of us, and what else are we here to do except to really help each other shine in those ways?
It is a different experience, though, right? When you are writing about traumatic experiences, as opposed to promoting a book and having to talk about them again and again and again.
It is.
Was it helpful to continue to talk about it or traumatizing?
After a certain point, like initially, it was not helpful.
Yeah.
Initially, it was like almost like Groundhog Day. Like, do I really have to relive this again and again and again? And so, you know, I don't take this lightly in terms of mental health, and especially I'm in the happiness space. Like, I've never been so low. I have never been so depressed. And I never used that word with myself. I respect it for usage of how we are, like, as human beings, but I was in a major hole. And by writing about it, I think it's like all of the above, because I had to write, because I had a deadline, and because I wanted to understand why I was going through those things. And by sharing, instead of like being in that hole in my head, I was able to see more light. And one thing I also learned over time is that you never know where the light is going to come from. But by just doing things, whether it's talking to a stranger on the street or just taking a walk or going back to, you know, nature in some way, that's when the light starts shining again. Maybe it's like still far in the distance, but those little glimmers is what brought me back to a better place. And we all have that formula for ourselves if we choose to explore it.
Any last thoughts for people or something I should have asked you and I didn't?
I mean, you had an amazing set of questions. It's more of the reminder, especially for this audience. And it sounds so cliche of that oxygen mask and nurturing our own greenhouse. Until we do the work within ourselves, and I know this is a very advanced, mature audience in terms of what that means, it's like the hardest, easiest thing we'll do. And knowing that things can change at any time, whether it's life or death, at least we know, even if we had the crappiest day, at least we know we're living a fulfilling life and we're spending our precious times and moments most meaningfully.
Thank you so much for joining us and for speaking with such honesty.
Thank you. Thank you for having and opening up that space and your amazing questions.
This episode featured Jen Lim, the CEO and co-founder of Delivering Happiness. It's a company that helps other organizations figure out how to use positive psychology and scientific definitions of happiness to create healthier cultures that bring more profitable and sustainable business. You can learn more at deliveringhappiness.com. And to get more details about Jen's greenhouse model, check out her newest book, Going Beyond Happiness Has Profound Effects on Our Business's Abilities to Adapt to Thrive. You can purchase a copy at the Conference for Women online bookstore or just visit jenlim.com. If you enjoy this podcast, make sure you share it with other people and be on the lookout for some incredibly exciting upcoming announcements about our fall 2022 Pennsylvania, Texas, and Massachusetts conferences for women. You can subscribe to our newsletters to receive speaker and registration announcements. It's at conferencesforwomen.org/subscribe. The Conferences for Women is the largest network of women's conferences in the nation. They draw more than 55,000 women and men to annual events in Boston, Philadelphia, Austin, and California, and lately, online. I'm Celeste Headley. This is Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. Thank you so much for listening. Be kind and be well.